think it's fair to say that by now, most people around the whole world are pretty familiar with the narrative that our planet is facing a dire crisis due to rising temperatures. The general premise of this narrative, it was laid out fairly well in January of last year when Al Gore was giving a presentation to the World Economic Forum and he said the following, quote, "Greenhouse gas emissions are now trapping as much extra heat as would be released by 600,000 Hiroshima-class atomic bombs exploding every single day on the Earth. That's what is boiling the oceans, creating these atmospheric rivers and the rain bombs and sucking the moisture out of the land and creating the droughts and melting the ice and raising the sea level and causing these waves of climate refugees." Likewise, 13 months after that gloomy speech in February of this year, you had the same doomsday apocalyptic message being echoed by the United Nations Secretary General, who said this during this year's United Nations Environment Assembly. Quote, "Our planet is on the brink. Ecosystems are collapsing, our climate is imploding, and humanity is to blame." Now, here's the thing though. Despite the ubiquitous number of articles that have been published saying that there is definitely a universal consensus in the scientific community surrounding this climate narrative, well, not all scientists agree. And the ones that don't are not quacks. Case in point, you have Mr. John Clauser, who won the Nobel Prize in Physics back in the year 2022. And Mr. Clauser, he sees the data differently. Speaking last year about the topic, here's what he said, quote, "The popular narrative about climate change reflects a dangerous corruption of science that threatens the world's economy and the well-being of billions of people. Misguided climate science has metastasized into massive shock journalism pseudoscience. In my opinion, there is no real climate crisis." And so a good question at this point would be, how can there be such a vast discrepancy on the topic that is so extensively researched, such as climate? There isn't just a small difference of opinion. I mean, these are two completely different views on something very fundamental. Well, we here at the Epoch Times, we were able to speak with Mr. Stephen Koonin. He's a former physics professor over at Caltech. He's currently on faculty at NYU, and he was previously the Undersecretary of Science in the U.S. Department of Energy. And having studied the production of climate-related data for the last several decades, well, Professor Koonin, he told us the following, quote, "I've watched a growing chasm between what the politicians, the media, and the NGOs were saying and what the science actually said. Nobody has an incentive to portray scientific truth and facts." Now, Professor Koonin published a book 3 years ago titled Unsettled: What Climate Science Tells Us, What It Doesn't, and Why It Matters. That book went on to become a bestseller, and what it essentially did was to analyze the process by which climate data goes from these dense 1,000-page scientific reports into headline news for public global consumption. And one of the most ubiquitous sources of this top-line climate data comes from an organization called the IPCC, which stands for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. This organization was established back in 1988 by both the United Nations as well as the World Meteorological Organization. Now, according to its own website, the IPCC is a, quote, "collection of scientists and government appointees that are dedicated to assessing the science on climate change." And as just a practical matter, the IPCC, it functions as both a scientific body as well as a political body. Quote, "The IPCC doesn't conduct its own research, but rather assembles teams of hundreds of scientists and working groups that collect reports from scientific journals regarding climate change, its effects, and what should be done about it. About every 7 years, an IPCC working group called Working Group 1 synthesizes the latest reports into assessment reports, often several thousand pages thick, which are then reviewed and edited by government appointees from 195 member nations. Now, last year, in the year 2023, the IPCC released their sixth assessment report. You can see it up on your screen. However, the information compiled in this report, while seemingly objective, is perhaps less so. Quote, "The information on which the assessment reports are based often has a bias from the start," critics say, "because research grants typically fund studies that support the prevailing narrative on climate change, and because scientific journals often avoid publishing studies that suggest climate change is not dire." Meaning that because scientific journals have fallen in line with the prevailing position regarding climate change, papers that don't conform to that position have a hard time getting published. And actually, even further, those papers have a hard time even getting off the ground and getting funded, given the fact that research grants are typically not doled out too easily on studies which might poke holes in the climate change narrative. And so even if you wind up compiling thousands of these types of studies, you might assume that you're getting an accurate picture of the science. However, because there's distortion at the level of the journals themselves, all the underlying conclusions in the studies have fallen into a type of groupthink. For instance, describing the situation, Professor William Happer, who is a professor of physics over at Princeton University, he told us here at the Epoch Times the following, quote, "Any literature that supports alarmism is promoted, and any that does not is rejected. The source of much of today's climate data comes from centers whose generous funding would cease if climate hysteria were to abate." Likewise, you have Professor Richard Lindzen, who is a professor of meteorology over at MIT and who actually served as one of the scientists in Working Group 1 over at the IPCC, and he told us here at the Epoch Times the following, quote, "The IPCC itself is only studying anthropogenic man-made climate change. It doesn't do anything regarding natural climate change, and that's a severe technical shortcoming because you can't do things like attribution unless you know what natural variability is." Now, here's perhaps the most interesting part. Despite all that, Professor Kunin, he told us that, quote, "When you read the assessment reports, focusing mostly on the science, they're actually pretty good. The data presented in the assessment reports is a relatively sober analysis. However, it provides little support for the narrative of climate catastrophe, at least as far as what has been observed to date." And as a concrete example of what he means by that, if you look at Chapter 12 of the most recent assessment report, the one that was just released last year, you will find the IPCC's assessment on the impact of extreme weather events. And the tables that they provide in that chapter, it shows that extreme weather events that have already emerged are limited. Furthermore, it states a low confidence for any increase in floods, rainstorms, landslides, drought, fire weather, cyclones, hurricanes, tornadoes, sandstorms, dust storms, hail, sea level rise, coastal flooding, and erosion. It also indicates a low confidence regarding a decrease in snow, glaciers, ice sheets, as well as lake, river, and sea ice beyond the Arctic region. Furthermore, it's worth noting that these assessments from the UN's IPCC are actually supported by findings from other organizations as well. For instance, the NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, they conducted a 30-year analysis of tornado trends, and they found that, quote, "The number of strong and violent tornadoes hasn't varied much since 1970. Likewise, there was a report published in Nature magazine in the year 2022, and it found a, quote, "Declining tropical cyclone frequency under global warming. On average, the global annual number of tropical cyclones has decreased by 13% in the 20th century compared with the pre-industrial baseline, which is 1850 to the year 1900. Likewise, the drought severity index that's published by the U.S. government's EPA, it shows, quote, "No material increase in droughts in the United States between 1895 and the year 2020. So, given this reality, you might ask a very logical follow-up question. If all these different analyses, including the analysis by the UN themselves, say one thing, why are news reports inundated with the "our climate is imploding and the oceans are boiling" narrative? And the answer to that question appears to be twofold. Firstly, the public statements from both the IPCC as well as the UN often diverge dramatically from what their own reports actually say. And then secondly, the predictions of a dire future are based on models rather than on observations. Because you see, alongside each one of the assessment reports, the IPCC, they also release a summary for policymakers. This summary, it distills down the large amount of data in the full report to just a short list of bullet points. Furthermore, to make it easier for news outlets to report the correct narrative, the IPCC, they also produce headline statements as well as press releases to provide a concise narrative on climate change. Here's how Professor Kunin describes the effect that this ultimately has. Quote, "The assessment report gets boiled down to the summary for policymakers, and while it's drafted by scientists, a small number of them, the governments have to approve the summary line by line. And so you already have the potential for, let's say, non-scientific factors entering. The summary for policymakers itself is 20 to 30 pages, and the media have to cover that. And they typically will cherry pick the most extreme parts of it, so that's how we get the distortions, and then that is exacerbated by the politicians seeing opportunity in distortion and the NGOs." And as one example of how this actually plays out in the real world, despite observing no increase in tornadoes, cyclones, droughts, wildfires, or floods attributed to climate change, well, the most recent IPCC headline statement, it warns that, quote, "There is a rapidly closing window of opportunity to secure a livable and sustainable future for all." And that right there actually gets to the heart of the matter, because much of the basis for climate alarmism, it comes not from observation, but rather from computer models, models that are thought to be highly accurate. For instance, the USDA, they conducted a study of climate models during a 50-year period from 1970 up until the year 2020, and here's what they said they found. Quote, observed changes in temperature and precipitation have generally been consistent with the changes projected by earlier models. The accurate projections of future climate and hindcasting of past climate makes us confident that models can reliably project changes in the climate. Now, that of course sounds very definitive. However, if you look beneath the surface of the climate modeling industry and you peel back a few layers, well, it really becomes questionable how reliable these projections actually are. Speaking about the IPCC models, here is what Professor Kunin told us here at the Epoch Times. Quote, "The IPCC draws up its predictions based on averaged results from dozens of models which disagree wildly with one another. The average surface temperatures generated by the models in the IPCC reports vary among themselves by around 3 degrees Celsius or 3 times the amount of warming observed throughout the entirety of the 20th century. The assessment reports downplay this embarrassment by focusing not on the actual temperature predictions, where models diverge, but rather on the predicted change in temperatures, where models are more likely to coincide." Then, on top of that, you have the process of tuning the models. Quote, "The models typically divide the Earth up into grid cells, each a few tens of square miles. These grid cells are tuned in a process of hardwiring the results from the cells to manually account for more random elements like cloud formations, storms, or humidity, which the models can't predict, but are material to temperature changes." Professor Kunin then outlined some of the problems present with this tuning process. Quote, "There are hundreds of such parameters because the climate system is complicated and has many different dimensions. And so as people tune the parameters differently, they get different results. Tuning also helps the models show results closer to observed data, but this highlights another shortcoming of the models. While purporting to predict the future, they often fail to reproduce historical temperatures. They also struggle to separate human influence from natural phenomena, all of which elevates the uncertainty of model predictions regarding human behavior. If you're trying, as a politician or NGO or company, to promote a narrative, you don't want to talk about the uncertainties. You just want to say it's going to be 5 degrees warmer and the world is going to hell. But here's the thing, and you already know this if you follow the news to any degree. If you question the official narrative, or if you say there's a lot of nuance in this discussion, you are apt to be labeled as a climate denier. As just one example of thousands, at the end of last year, here's what Joe Biden said, quote, "Anyone who willfully denies the impact of climate change is condemning the American people to a very dangerous future. The impacts we're seeing are only going to get worse, more frequent, more ferocious, and more costly." And so, outside of the bias of the scientific journals and the difficulty of getting grant funding, you also have the leader of the world's most powerful country repeating the model conclusions as stated fact and labeling anyone who willfully denies those conclusions as essentially a danger to our future. However, here's the thing. If you take away all the hyperbole and the political threats, here's what the underlying data actually shows, at least according to Professor Kunin. Quote, "We've had modest warming since the 1900s, 1.3 degrees Celsius at the global level. Despite that, by whatever measure you want to use, lifespan, nutrition, GDP, death rates from extreme events, it's all going in a positive direction. Sea level rise is continuing at just about a foot a century. But the actual and projected economic impacts of warming are in the noise. Even the IPCC says it's small compared to many other things that determine human well-being." And of course, in regards to the economic impacts, there's the other side of the coin. According to a report published by the Heritage Foundation, quote, "Modeling the cost and benefits to the United States of complying with the Paris Agreement and meeting the Biden administration's goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions to 52% below 2005 levels by the year 2030 predicts these policies would reduce global temperatures by 0.5 degrees at the end of the century. Even with theoretical efficiency, we find the cost of the policy to be staggering. The economy would, in aggregate, lose $7.7 trillion of GDP through the year 2040, which is $87,000 per family of four." Now that's pretty bad, but consider that that's what the developed world will suffer. In terms of the developing world, depriving them of fossil fuels will have absolutely severe consequences. On that point, Professor Lindzen, the professor from MIT, he told us the following, quote, "The billions of people who don't have energy, who don't have modern conveniences, they will be condemned to perpetual poverty. CO2 has played an important role in increasing agricultural productivity, so we'll see everyone paying more for food and more people starving. You are already seeing tragic consequences even in the United States, where a whole generation of kids has been told that they have no future. They're not having children themselves, because what's the point of having children in a world that's going to self-destruct?" However, questioning the underlying narrative that's leading young people to not have children might have you branded a climate denier. If you'd like to go deeper into this story, I'll throw my reference notes, the links to all the reports we went through, as well as a phenomenal comprehensive article that was published in the Epoch Times by Kevin Stockland. You'll be able to find all those links down in the description box below if you're the type of person that likes to dig into the weeds. And then until next time, I'm your host, Roman from the Epoch Times. Stay informed, and most importantly, stay free.